everybody. I'm the Snowman, inviting you to join me for my wild and wacky talk show called The Snowman Radio Broadcast. We get way off the beaten path, and I'll bet it's your kind of show. It's coming up soon, so stay tuned, and thanks for listening to ACB Radio.
To you, wherever you are. My name is Jonathan Mosen. Welcome to Blind Line, the only international call-in show exclusively for the blind and vision impaired. It's incredible to think that I'm sitting here in slightly wintry conditions in Wellington, the capital of New Zealand, and this data is being served to a internet server in the US. We are using the Spiderphone talk facilities so that you can call in and speak with our guests, who I'll introduce with you shortly, and it all comes back in a kind of a loop to our studios here in New Zealand. All of that, and yet they can't find a cure for the common cold, which has certainly slowed me down and had me stricken for much of the week, but I'm feeling a bit better now. Anyway, enough of my woes and concerns. Let me tell you what's on the program today. Shortly we'll be speaking with Patricia Lawrence. Yes, that name will certainly ring a bell to many of you, and we talk about explorations into destinations with the Travel Radio program. And after that it'll be the open forum, your chance to have a chat about anything that you would like. And one thing that you may want to consider over the next little while when we open up the forum is I'd like to hear your views on blind humour. Obviously, one person's humour is another person's debasement, I guess. So give some thought as to what constitutes humour. Is it appropriate for blind people to be comedians and make fun of their disability? Is that okay? Is it when other people make fun of blindness, I guess, such as Mr. Magoo? Do you personally find that offensive? So we'll have a talk about blind humour, and also, of course, anything that you would like to raise in our open forum part of the programme. But now it gives me a lot of pleasure to introduce the presenter and producer of a programme which has become incredibly popular in the short time that it's been on ACB Radio, but it goes back a lot longer than ACB Radio does, and indeed it's heard on 53 radio reading services across the US and around the world, and that of course is Travel Radio. The host of the program is Patricia Lawrence, and she joins us now. Pat, very nice to have you on the program. Welcome to Blind Line.
Hello, Jonathan.
Wow, it's really good to have you here. That voice is just so familiar after all this time. Let me begin by asking you about Travel Radio and how it came to be, because, I mean, I must admit, I've sat here, especially in these slightly wintry conditions here where I am right now, and I've thought, gosh, wouldn't it be nice to get a job like yours, cruising around the world and going to these exotic places and then reporting back to us mere mortals who have to sit there and listen. Tell us a bit about how it came about.
Well, I would be glad to. And first, I want to say it's very interesting that I agree with you that we can talk halfway around the world on either side of the hemisphere, because I'm in Northern California enjoying a wonderful, blustery spring day.
Well, actually, it's autumn, almost winter here.
Oh, uh-huh. Well, you're sending back the sun, and I appreciate it very much.
Mm.
Where I can begin with Travel Radio is about 10 years ago in 1990. I lived here on the coast of Mendocino, and I was not thinking about traveling. And just for the record, I want everyone to know that I am not a travel expert. I've hardly traveled. I didn't have my first passport until 1990. I was involved in an alternative energy business. We were building electric vehicles and installing solar panels and hydroelectric systems here on the Northern California. And I guess I was kind of involved in the tourism industry because I also ran a bookkeeping service, and a bookkeeping client ran a tourism concession. She still does have trail rides on the beach up here in Mendocino, which is about a four-hour drive from San Francisco. And so I guess I was in the tourism industry because I was taking out trail rides on the beach. I liked to ride horses, and that was an opportunity to do that. And I was in Mendocino shopping one day in a grocery store, a natural food store, and a man approached me as I was leaving. And he said, my car is broken. Can you give me a ride home or to my road? And I said, oh, certainly, I'm going that way. I gave him a ride, and somehow in this very short time, this man, his name is Stanley Barr, he somehow obtained my phone number. And then not too long after that, we were having abalone dinner together, and we hit it off and became involved in a personal relationship. And he was a travel writer. He would travel the world submitting articles to magazines, to in-flight magazines, to travel-related magazines. And he was getting kind of tired of it. He always had to please the editors. And about that same time, our local public radio station was coming into being. And they said to Stan, well, you have such a wonderful radio voice. You had such a nice big baritone voice. Why don't you turn your print travel writing into travel broadcasting? And that's what he did. And there I was, volunteered to help out. We took audio engineering classes at the local school and I learned how to be an audio engineer. And Stan was the talent. It was his voice. He would interview people. And I would stand very shyly in the background running the dials on the old reel-to-reels and being the engineer, learning how to write letters and give everything, all the support for this radio show, which started out just on this one public radio station in Mendocino, California, which very small population. It's a rural area. We have more trees than we do people, thank goodness.
Yeah, well, they say that about New Zealand and sheep, by the way, too.
Yes, so I hear. And so Stan and I continued to travel the world. But this time we were traveling with our marances and our microphones instead of our pen and our paper. And we went to exotic places like Vietnam to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the ending of hostilities. We went to the Caribbean several times. Stan on his own went to Cuba, interviewed people there, and brought back the material. These were interviews. They were just interviews, and I would give them just a cursory edit on the reel-to-reels. I was good at cutting and splicing, but they were interviews. We weren't gathering the sounds yet. We hadn't figured out how to edit enough or how to gather the sounds of nature and of the world. And then in 1996, when all of this technology started happening, Stan said, well, we need to get into the electronic age and we need a computer. So we obtained a gateway computer, portable computer, and the software from a company called Samplitude to edit digitally on the computer. So in the first part of 1996, I was learning how to edit his interviews, which at that time were getting a little more sophisticated. We were looking for those sounds. We were trying to be more than just an interview radio show, because there's a lot of people who interview on the radio, which is good, but we're out there in the field. We're not in the studio, so we wanted to bring back more sound. So when Stan came back from his trip to Cuba in May of 96, and he went from Mexico. You still can't go to Cuba from the United States, although that's changing. But at that time, in May of 96, you couldn't do that. But he came back and we produced those shows. We sent them out, and by this time we were on a couple of more public radio stations. We were on radio reading services around the country, six or seven. We were just finding out about radio reading services. And we were also on the U.S. military satellite. And I was always waiting to get bumped when we sent them the Cuba tapes.
Yes.
As far as I know, they aired them.
It's a romantic story in a way, isn't it? I mean, to have somebody come out of nowhere and sweep you off your feet and take you to all sorts of exotic destinations, it does sound very romantic, I must say.
It was. And I had no idea that I was going to end up doing what I'm doing now when I met him in 1990. He totally changed my life. And the radio show completely changed my life. I was going in a completely other direction.
Did you have any radio aspirations
Yes.
before you did travel radio?
No. No, not one. I have a bookkeeping service and the alternative energy business, and that was it. I had no inclination to travel or to produce a radio show. I was afraid to hear my own voice on the radio.
God, some of us who are in this business for a long time still feel that way.
And it was... It's just experience. It's doing it over and over again. It's determination. It's just saying what's more important, the messages that I want to bring back for listeners, or my fear. Well, the messages that are more important, so I have to overcome my fears. Because the information is important, and I believe that we find information that isn't always readily available.
Well, speaking with Patricia Lawrence from Travel Radio, I'll just remind people that if you'd like to give us a call and ask a question for yourself about any places that Pat might have been to, or any technical issues about how the program's done, anything you'd like, maybe you'd like to ring up and tell her how much you enjoy the program, because I know we get a lot of email, then I'll give you the details. It should be in your title bar as you listen to the program. If you are using WindowEyes, you can get it with Control-Shift-T, and JFW users, Insert-T will do it, but the number is, it's a New York number, so it's 1-212-812-2800. That's 1-212-812-2800. And courtesy of Spiderphone, enter the PIN 108-341-73. That's 10-83-41-73. The lines are open now. So how did you actually get from being the audio engineer in the production side of it to hosting the show?
That's the sad part. The sad part is that in August of 1996, Dan Barr was stung in the arm by a bee, just a normal bee, a yellow jacket, as we call them, and he died 15 minutes later of anaphylactic shock.
Good gracious.
He didn't know that he was allergic to death of bees. So my really strong message to anyone who knows that they're allergic even a little bit, it can be a cumulative. And there wasn't anything he could do unless he had a bee kit with him, which then opens up your passages again, but you suffocate what happens. And he lived more than 15 minutes from a hospital anyway, so there was nothing they could do.
Isn't it so tragic and ironic that somebody who would have traveled the world and probably been in all sorts of potential danger should die in that fashion?
Exactly. And it was even more amazing is that he had a bleeding disorder. He had something called Factor 11. If he had gotten cut somewhere in the remote highlands of China or in Costa Rica, he was learning he was getting his scuba diving license. If he had done any, just a little scratch, he could have bled to death. And he was never worried about it. Well, he took precautions, but it didn't stop him. But he was 63 years old. And he had lived a full life. He was certainly looking forward to the radio show. But he left it in my hands, and I couldn't stop. I said, well, what am I going to do? I've got recorded material that he had interviewed people, several shows worth, weeks worth, and I just continued. I produced those. A man, Douglas Roycroft, who was working with us, helped out, and I just kept going.
And how did you get into the radio reading service market, Pat? Because, I mean, obviously you started with a general public radio focus, I guess. So I'm interested in how you made that transition, because I take it now that Travel Radio's majority audience is. We'll come back to that because we actually have a call on the line, so we'll come back to that shortly. You have a question for Pat Lawrence. There.
And that's called the down, John.
That's always a good idea when you call on a talk show, I reckon.
Hey, I'll turn down, you stupid thing.
Yeah.
Colin Howard here from England. Can you hear me?
Hello, yes.
Yeah, hello, Pat. Colin Howard here from England. I'm chairman of the National Talking Express, which is one of the magazines in the UK that carries your talk, your travel radio program.
Yes.
You probably know Phil Troll. I know you've spoken to him.
Yes, I have. Yes.
He's our administrator, and I think he's supposed to be listening. He did tell me he's going to be listening today.
Oh, I hope he is. Hello, Phil.
Yeah. And we thoroughly enjoy the program, and it's very, very popular on the magazine. The one question I'd like to ask is, when is it going to be in stereo?
Oh, as soon as I get a larger computer.
Ah, it's all done on computers.
Yeah, because what I am limited by is a hard drive on my laptop, or I have two, I can interchange them, and I just barely have enough room.
Really?
I can put on several shows. It's a big hard drive. But, yes, that's my limitation, is the space.
Yeah, we do enjoy, and Jonathan's putting NTE over ACB at the moment. I don't know what he's doing about travel radio, because, of course, he carries travel radio in other ways. So, are you actually taking it out, Jonathan, or are you leaving it in?
Oh, no, we're leaving it in, Colin. So what actually happens is that when we have NTE supplement on, which we do obviously once every month, then people get two bites of the cherry and hear travel radio twice in that particular week.
Yeah, but it's not always the same show, though, is it? I mean,
no.
There are the... I can't remember which one it was now. There was one we're doing about Glasgow, which I thought was a very... very interesting program indeed. Obviously, I don't listen to all of them because they're not always of that interest, but certainly the one about bookbinding I found very interesting, and the one about Glasgow I found very interesting. I think more or less the stuff that you do about the UK I find quite interesting. I suppose I would do, because I come from the UK, don't I?
Well, yes, and my ancestors do too, and I'm very interested in traveling to Northern Ireland.
Mm.
And
have you done anything yet about the Heritage Centre down here in Portsmouth?
No, I have not been to England. I have not experienced England, and I'm looking forward to that too.
Well, the Heritage Centre in Portsmouth, of course, has got HMS Victory and the Warrior and all these other well-known ships, you know.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, 2005 will be the 200th anniversary of the Battle of Trafalgar.
Oh, well, maybe I should schedule a visit for that year.
Yeah, maybe. Well, we'd like to see you. We look forward to seeing you, and we look forward to hearing the show. Yeah, as I say, we thoroughly enjoyed them, and I know that the listeners to NTE, the feedback we get, everybody says, keep it going, keep it going. We have had a few people that have moaned and groaned and said, no, we don't like it. Obviously, when we get our radio station up and running, I'm not saying if, I'm saying when now, we will then be using the shows as programming, you know, for the radio station.
Oh, nice to hear that.
Which, are you going to be at the IAAIS conference in Washington?
No, I am not, but a representative of Travel Radio is going to be there. Robert Lewis, Program Director at the Maryland Radio Reading Service in Baltimore.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, I'm going to be there at the Renaissance Mayflower. Sounds nice. Sounds brilliant.
I'm so sorry that I will miss you.
There'll be two of us traveling from National Talking Express, a chap called Paul David and myself, and... we're really looking forward to the trip.
Oh, it'll be wonderful in Washington that time.
Yeah, well, what will the weather be like then?
I'm not for sure. I'm on the other coast, but I think it will be warm.
Warm.
Yeah.
Well, it just turned cold here. In England, they're forecasting wet snow for northern Scotland, would you believe?
Well, let me tell you, Colin, when you go to Washington, do yourself a favour and have some decent cold beer. And I hope that when Pat eventually does go to England, she will do a feature on this bizarre English warm beer custom.
Oh, the bizarre English form. Oh, we like our beer. You see, if it's warm, it's got more flavour. I mean, it hasn't got to be room temperature, but it's got to be about 45 to 50. That's nice.
Well, I'm going to chop you off now, Colin.
Okay, mate. Well, all the best there, and we'll catch you later then.
Yeah, okay, then.
Very good.
Bye now.
Okay, cheers, and John.
Thanks for phoning in, especially in the middle of the night like that. But we can't have him. I had to chop him off, Pat, because we can't have him talking nonsense about warm beer.
Well, no, and they won't have to worry about me competing with their beer because I don't like it warm or cold.
Oh, well, that's all right. I was asking you about how you got into... It was really, actually, very nice to hear from Colin from NTE. They do a wonderful job there, and, of course, it's 2 in the morning, nearly 2:30 in the morning where he is. Let me ask you about the radio reading service market and how you got into that.
We found out about radio reading services when Stan and I went to a public radio conference in San Francisco. I believe it was in 1995, and met one of the program directors from our radio reading service, Bill Pasco, and struck up a conversation, and that was really our first introduction to radio reading services. All I knew before was something about a dedicated black box, and I didn't know. Reading the newspapers, we really didn't know. So a few of the stations, we contacted the stations, and they started airing the shows. When Stan died in 1996, we were heard on 6 radio reading services, and now we're heard on over 50. Including Canada, New Zealand, the world, ACB Radio, and other places.
So is the radio reading service market now the exclusive domain that Travel Radio caters to, or are you on other general public radio outlets as well?
Well, I kind of put the ball down when it came to public radio and have focused on the radio reading services. Everyone likes the show. They're really receptive. I can mail the tapes free of charge through the U.S. Post Office, and so we're on the radio reading services and also on the U.S. military satellite. They air our shows a couple of times a week to 138 military bases around the world and U.S. embassies and consulates.
Now, a reminder to those tuning into Blind Line Live, that's between 9 and 11 Eastern on Wednesday evenings, 6 to 8 Pacific, and 1 till 3 Thursday morning GMT, that you're welcome to give our guest, Patricia Lawrence, a call and ask any questions. That number again is 1-212-812-2800, courtesy of Spiderphone. That's 1-212-812-2800, and enter the PIN 10-83-41-73. That's 1-08-34173. That information's in the title bar of the player that you are listening with, or with which you are listening. It must be quite an expensive place program to produce, actually, Pat, I suppose, because you're being flown around all over the place. You must have some pretty generous sponsors to allow it to continue.
Exactly. That's exactly what I have. It's those companies and countries, destinations, attractions that want to promote tourism. So tourism becomes a bridge for not only Travel Radio to get out in the world, because these companies and countries want to have media come to their countries and talk about what is there, but I also think that Travel Radio serves another purpose, another way of bridging people together, of bringing the information back to people to help them to perhaps whet their appetite to want to travel for themselves, or to hear and gather information about the world without ever having to travel. So it works. There's many ways that Travel Radio functions as an information center.
Yeah, I guess the latter category must be quite important, because I suspect there's a bit of a socio-economic irony here, that in the first instance, most blind people do not earn a lot. Most are on some sort of form of welfare. The unemployment rate, as you'll be aware, is extremely high. And, of course, the majority, probably about 80-odd percent of the blind population, is elderly and may have other infirmities that restrict their ability to travel. So you'd be conscious of that, I guess.
Oh, very much. Yes, very much. And with technology today and the availability of lower flights, and I'm not promoting tourism and saying that everybody should go out and buy a ticket, but that travel is becoming more affordable.
How do you choose where you're going? Or is that sort of chosen for you based on where you can find sponsors to take you?
Oh, it's what I'm interested in. It's really my interest. For instance, the trip to Scotland. I went to Scotland to attend an International Institute for Peace through Tourism conference. Isn't that a great organization?
Great concept, yes.
Tourism? And this organization, which is a U.S.-based organization, was founded by one man, Mr. Lou Damore. And what he does is he brings people from around the world to conferences and to other, in other ways, brings people together to talk about how peace, how tourism can promote peace. And I'm talking about people from the United Nations, from the World Tourism Organization. In 1994, when Stan Barr and I went to their second global conference in Montreal, Queen Noor of Jordan was the keynote speaker. This time in Scotland, David Trimble, Honorable David Trimble of Northern Ireland, was the keynote speaker. This is an organization of thinking, concerned people who believe they don't have the answers, but they really believe that tourism can have an effect on world peace. Tourism boosts the economy. Tourism brings people together. It creates a feeling of knowing other people. Who do you want to bomb if you've just spent an afternoon sunning yourself in there on their beautiful coastline? There is great hope through this organization, and I don't want to sound too Pollyannish, but there is great hope through organizations like this that we can see another way. That
yes.
The world can be another way.
Yeah, it's a bit harder, isn't it, to separate humanity from objectionable political philosophy when you've been to a country and you've met the people and you've been in their marketplaces and seen their families. It makes it that much harder to be removed from that.
Yes, yes. And the International Institute for Peace Through Tourism will be holding a global summit in Jordan. And so in November, I'm hoping that I will be in Jordan to report on the conference, interview people who have been there, but also tour Jordan and find out what's in Jordan and what's important about Jordan. The antiquities, the ancient cities, all of that makes such wonderful radio programs.
So in an average year, how much time do you spend out of the country?
Well, I don't do all my shows out of the country because I also travel locally, but it's not as much as you think because, as you may notice, when I go to a destination, I produce several shows, but probably not more than 6 weeks.
And that gives you enough content to sort of do a program every week. They are weekly, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yes. Yes, a new program every week. So I do have to take advantage of a destination having a lot of information. France is an example. I was in France last year in the province of Provence, and I brought back several shows, but I did lots of different things. I went horseback riding, I went gliding, I went wine tasting, food tasting, I visited lavender factories and chocolate shops. So there was a lot to do.
We'll have to look up the one about the wine tasting and just see if your speech starts to sound different by the end of it.
Well, you should hear it when I was in the glider, because that was one of the most scariest times. But it turned out okay, because I'm back on the ground. But before we went up in this glider on these mountains, they're called the Alpes, which are close to the Pyrenees and the Alps, but they are not the French Alps, they're just a small little mountain chain. And the glider said, well, I don't know if we can go up today, it's really windy. Oh, well, let's go up anyway. So we did, and it was the first time that I'd ever been in a glider. It was really beautiful to look out over this vast expanse of farmland and and be in this machine that wasn't making any noise except for the wind, and knowing that it was only the wind that was keeping us up. It was a real leap of faith.
Yes, and yet at the same time, that gliding can be such a sort of a peaceful experience, to be that high up in the air and no real noise, just a kind of a swishing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was wonderful. It was really great. It was a wonderful experience.
Yeah. So for those people who are technically inclined, I know that people will be wanting me to ask you all about how you do this. Do you now, with technology at its present state, go around with a portable mini disc recorder when you're doing your recording?
Yes, exactly. The technology got really small, and before, when I thought I was carrying around 10 pounds of tape recorder that I was doing really well, which included big V-cell batteries, and I thought that was great. That was pretty small. Well, now my little MD Walkman, my Sony MD Walkman, I don't mean to plug them for any particular reason, but that's what it is. That was the best model that I could find for my purposes. It fits in my pocket. It's smaller than my microphone, which is a shotgun microphone, and I can get some of those far away sounds. Again, my purpose of wanting to record the natural world and information about the world, and I need to have a microphone that's going to reach those distances to get those animals. I want travel radio to speak for the animals. I want to record the sound of nature as much as possible. And this mini disc, then, is digital. So everything is digital now, and it just goes right from the mini disc to the computer and back out again. And eventually what I'd like to do is then from the computer, it will go right up to our website at travelradio.com, and then I'll call you, Jonathan, and say, or I'll email you, pardon me, and then I'll say the shows are ready, and then you'll just be able to download them, and they'll never hit the air again.
Well, that will certainly make life very simple. Those mini discs, I must admit, I'm a late adopter because just about everybody in this business of audio seemed to have one before I got one. But I picked one up when I was in New York a couple of months ago, and I wish I'd have got one sooner. You know, the audio quality is so impressive in such a tiny size. When you say you put yours onto the PC once you've done the recording, do you have to actually sit there and dub it so you go from the line out of the mini disc to the line in of the sound card, or do you have some way of actually getting the digital information straight off the mini disc and onto the PC?
No, I don't, and that would be nice because it does come in and out analog and goes in digital. Mm. Yeah, so that is a problem. But no, and I feel like the digital, even putting it on a computer, cleans up any sounds. Even though I don't do anything, I don't do any equalization, it always sounds worse when I do it. So I just leave it the way it is.
Okay, so you're using, you're dubbing the stuff onto the PC, and so when you're doing the travel radio program itself, putting the thing together, that's all done in the digital domain on your PC. Is it all the mixing and everything?
It is, and the amazing part about this technology, and it's why audio and even video doesn't show up, it doesn't hold up in court, in testimony, because I can take the S off the end of somebody's word and put it at the beginning of somebody's word. I can make people say things they didn't, which I don't. But
yeah, I've actually been meaning to do. We have a technology show on ACB Radio in the US time. It goes out on Sunday evenings, and people don't. I've been talking to people off the air about this. People don't believe how minute digital editing can be, and I thought of finding a way of giving a graphic demonstration of that, because you can literally completely change what someone has said to the point of reversing the meaning or putting words in another order. And you're right, you know, any good digital editor could make audio testimony totally meaningless these days.
Yes, exactly.
Fascinating stuff. Now, what about what's the most difficult or the worst, or you talked about the gliding issue being a bit scary. What's the thing that sticks in your mind as to the program that you've tried to produce that was either scary or difficult or somehow standing out in a negative kind of context?
I don't know if I do any programs like that. I want to have fun. I want to bring back good experiences. I can't think of anything. I have wonderful experiences. I've been in the Galapagos Islands and really close up to birds It's really true. You can walk right up to the animals on the Galapagos Islands. I recorded the sound of a baby sea lion speckling.
Wow.
A three-day-old baby sea lion. Have I sent you that show yet? No, I don't think so.
I have got one or two Galapagos Islands ones, so maybe... Was that where you got the sea lion at the Galapagos Islands?
Yes, yes. And again, it's that sound of nature that I want to capture. In Costa Rica, the birds, the sounds of the monkeys clamoring through the trees. I hope to get some really good sounds next week. I'm off to Yosemite National Park here in California. And I'm going to meet with a wildlife biologist and talk about bears. And she informs me that the only time you can hear bears really well is 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. Well, guess who's going to get up at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning to record the sound of the bears?
You know, when I listen to you talking about these wonderful sounds and things, it really does remind me of the kind of theatre of the mind concept that real proponents of radio like Stan Freberg used to go on about, because the pictures can be so vivid when you do such a good job as you do of creating the sound pictures. It's a shame there aren't more documentaries of this kind available on radio.
But it seems like there could be, and certainly it is a challenge to gather those sounds. And I can tell you about an example. I won't name names, and I did send you the show, but a associate producer went to Africa. This is an example of how difficult it is to actually get the sounds of nature. She went to Africa on a very exclusive trip into a wildlife sanctuary where animals would come up to this water hole and just drink, and there were baboons and hippopotamus and elephant and all of these animals from, they would come to this, it is a man-made water hole, because no longer can animals migrate through Africa. They'll be killed. So they have to be maintained in these reserves. We're kind of losing even that part of wildness. Africa is no longer the wild continent that we thought of 50 or more years ago. She was in this camouflaged shelter overlooking the lake and interviewing the naturalist guide, and was not able to get any sounds of the animals. That's really sad. I was really sad to know that, because they didn't make any sounds. Animals don't always make sounds when you want them to. And if you're more than 6 or 8 feet away and don't have a thousand dollar microphone, then you don't pick up the sounds.
Yes, you sort of hear these stories about these naturalists who spend 9 months of their life sitting in one spot in Africa waiting for some animals to mate or something so they can film it, you know.
Yes, exactly. And that is a challenge. And as this equipment gets better, the microphones get better, the cost comes down, then those sounds will become more of the programming, because that is my goal.
So how many people are involved in travel radio?
Oh, anyone that would like to be. On a volunteer basis at this point, of course, but I do encourage people to get involved in any way that they would like to. For instance, Robert Lewis, that we spoke of earlier from the Baltimore, Maryland Radio Reading Service, he's going to tour the National Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., with the curator of the museum. And he's also going to tour Mount Vernon and stay at a very exclusive hotel right across from the White House called the Hay Adams Hotel, and they have a package, a Bastille Day package, and Bastille Day is coming up in July, and George Washington and President Lafayette of France were very good friends, and Lafayette ended up giving George Washington the key to the Bastille, which is at Mount Vernon. Robert is going to take a tour of Mount Vernon and record for travel radio the history of the relationship between the U.S. and France and Bastille Day.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. So are you saying that you actually solicit contributions from people?
What we do is we get the support of the businesses and countries and companies that are involved in the tourism industry. I'm not paying for Robert's two-night stay in one of the most expensive hotels in Washington, D.C. They are, in exchange for having their name on travel radio, are providing him with this luxurious room.
Man, I should try that sometime. Last time I went to Washington, I got put up in the Howard Johnson.
Yeah, it's not the same.
I'm sure it isn't.
No, you'll have to talk to Robert about that.
Okay, so that sounds like a really interesting concept. So you basically, the costs, although they would in theory be significant, can actually be quite small based on the kind of reputation that Travel Radio has.
Yes, and then I enter into a partnership, so to speak, with those companies. For instance, when I go to Yosemite next week, I'm going to drive the 4 hours to Oakland, which is in the East San Francisco Bay, and then I'm going to board an Amtrak. Well, Amtrak likes the idea that Travel Radio wants to take Amtrak to get to Yosemite because there's too many cars in Yosemite already anyway, and I'm going to take, the train doesn't go all the way into the valley, but it goes to a town outside, and then they have a nice bus that goes into the valley. So, of course, Amtrak wants to sponsor these shows about Yosemite by providing transportation for myself and an associate producer. And that's how I do it. So it keeps my costs down, and it also allows other businesses and countries to participate in reaching people who Travel Radio's audience. And when I tell them that Travel Radio is heard by people who are print impaired, blind, low vision, they are very interested. They are very interested in having people with disabilities travel to their country. They see this as a huge market that needs encouragement to get out in the world. The world is becoming more accessible. People are understanding how to make the world accessible to people. Barriers are being broken down.
Do you sort of get some quizzical looks from people when you're, say, you're catching this Amtrak train and you might want to do a bit of recording if it's appropriate for the program that you're doing, and you're sitting there on this Amtrak train with your mini disc and your shotgun microphone talking away into it? Do they sort of say, yeah, what is that lady doing already?
No, because I don't do the talking. My goal is to record what other people would hear if they had the same experience. So Travel Radio is not editorial. It is I'm a news reporter in a way. I'm bringing back the news, and it may even be a current event. Or it could be a tour of a museum or a park or an interview with someone who has been somewhere. But it's not editorial, and as you noticed on the shows, I do very little talking.
Yes, it's almost like narration you're doing rather than interviewing, isn't it?
That's right. And because it's in a half an hour, I don't have a lot of time, and it's really tough sometimes to figure out what to take in, what to leave out, and what to put in, because I want to get as much information across as possible, because I have a passion for most of these issues as well.
You have a lot of appropriate, very well done music that goes along with your programming as well. Where does that come from?
Most of the music that I use is composed and performed by a 16-year-old man here in Mendocino, Jason Sterfling. He is a musical prodigy. He has never taken music lessons, and he just somehow was born with piano keys on the end of his fingers.
What an incredible thing. So is he doing other things? Is he able to make a good living out of music at that tender age?
He's trying to. He's trying to. And he's just put out another CD. And I think his music is beautiful. I think it's inspiring. And whenever I have a show that I want to use his music on, I'll just read his titles. And I'll say, oh, I think this sounds good. And then it'll fit with the mood of the show. And it does.
Does he also really compose to order for you? So if he hasn't, for instance, done something with a bit of bagpipes in, and you've done something to do with Scotland, will he do something specific for Travel Radio?
No. For example, I used music from a musician in Scotland. So when I travel, I also look for music. I look for musicians that would like to have their music featured on Travel Radio. And many times they say, oh, of course.
I can't resist asking you this question. Are you going to come to this part of the world, to Australia and New Zealand and the general Pacific region?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. And one of my interests in New Zealand is with your Project Crimson. They plant trees around New Zealand. And you have a couple of trees, the Christmas tree. You'll have to refresh my memory. It's been a while, but they are a really dedicated organization to keep your trees alive.
Well, I'll tell you something interesting, and this is probably something that I don't think I've shared this with the ACB radio audience at all. My wife's parents, my parents-in-law, they are the only human inhabitants on an island in the Hauraki Gulf. That's, of course, if you can call a mother-in-law a human inhabitant. Oh, sorry, I shouldn't say that. But they live on a place called Tiritiri Matangi Island, which is in the Hauraki Gulf in Auckland, just out of Auckland, which is New Zealand's largest city. And that island is a dedicated native bush reserve, and what they've done is they've overseen the project, but they've also had literally thousands of volunteers come every weekend and schools during the week to this island and planted it in rare native bush trees that are unique to New Zealand. And then they've also unleashed rare, nearly extinct native birds in a natural habitat there. So you've got very, very rare birds there, such as the kiwi and the takahe and the saddleback. And listening to the bird song at about 5 in the morning on a summer's day is just something extraordinarily unique. And that's what they do. So, you know, if you ever make it to New Zealand, you come and look us up, and you've always got somewhere to stay, and we'd love to show you around there.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. I'm ready to come, and just tell me the best time of the year, and that your family's island would make at least one entire show. And it sounds like there's plenty of information and sounds there. That sounds wonderful.
Oh, the sounds are like nothing you've ever heard. Like really nature's music. And my father-in-law is a real raconteur. He can tell you wonderful stories, and he's just sort of got a way of making it come alive, actually. A very brilliant man. And the best time to come would be January or February, just after Christmas. In fact, you could have a lovely summer's Christmas here, and then, you know, travel around in the hot summer of about January and February.
Oh, that's a great idea, and skip Mendocino's winter.
Well, exactly, and you'd be made most welcome. There are a number of other similar projects, but obviously getting you on that particular island is not a problem, as we say, and it would make a great travel radio. I think the sounds are just something special. In fact, somebody enterprising got permission to go over there, and they recorded all these native birds and things in the early morning, and they put some of this kind of mood music to it, you know, the sort of new age stuff, and they sold it as a relaxation tape.
Oh, good for them.
Yeah. so that's good. So what of the future for Travel Radio? I mean, it sounds like it's thriving. You're obviously in this for the long haul. No plans to stop at this point?
I'm addicted. I can't give it up. I love doing it. It's, as I said before, it changed my life. I never thought I was going to be doing this. I never had any idea that I could do this. I mean, here I am. Plans for the future, I'm going to be in France in September. The interesting thing about France and trees is that they're going to plant trees from east to west across France as a symbol of peace. Complete row of trees from one end of the country to the other. I don't know if I'm going to see that on this trip. I'm going to be in Brittany, that little peninsula of France that sticks out into the English Channel, where a lot of people are of Gaelic descent, not French descent. And there's a lot of controversy and rivalry there, and that should be quite interesting. Although I try to not be political and not to get into heated discussions about things, I would rather have the information of the country and the sounds as my subjects and not political problems and disparities.
Yeah, I suppose it must be a fine line at times, though. I mean, especially if you're, for instance, going through the Holocaust Museum, for instance. I mean, in some respects, that's quite a political subject, isn't it?
Oh, it certainly is. It certainly is. And the when the director told me, we were talking about the museum, and I asked Robert if he would like to record the tour, and he said, oh, yes. And then I talked to the director, and he said, you know that people with disabilities were one of the first people to be exterminated. And I said, oh, well, I had forgotten that. And so I went back to Robert and said, do you sure you want to do this? Take plenty of tissue for the tears. And he said, oh, I will. So, yes.
What's on the travelradio.com website? You mentioned that you have one there, and that eventually there'll be MP3 files for we broadcasters to pick up. What have you got on the site right now?
We have our award-winning show about California gray whales, and that's a whole other chapter of travel radio. Can I tell you about that?
Oh, please do.
Well, it started when I read an article in the San Francisco Chronicle in 1997 about a research team doing research on California gray whales as they migrated from the Bering Sea in Alaska to the San Ignacio Bay in Mexico, in Southern California, in Baja California. And I contacted the researchers and said I'd like to do a radio show. And they said, oh, sure, come on down. And I got in their sea kayak, made it all the arrangements, got in their sea kayak. The three of us went out. It was a three-person sea kayak, and I was in the middle. And I didn't even have my shotgun microphone, just a regular studio microphone. I went out. I didn't even know if my recorder was on. And there were the whales. We came out into Monterey Bay, and the whales were going north. It was this time of year. Well, it was a little earlier in March. And the whales were going north. And they came up right alongside of this kayak and came up out of the water and back down into the water, up and down, eight of them, eight of these huge whales. And all I could do is hope that my recorder was working. I didn't know it was a Marantz. I didn't know if it was working. I didn't have any earphones on even. Now I always have earphones. I didn't know if it was going to work. And it did. I captured those sounds. I was able to bring them back and increase the volume on my computer so I could get those sounds of those whales blowing and breathing. And when the show aired locally on the public radio station, friends heard it and they said, oh, that's an award-winning show. And I went, oh, no, it's got lots of technical difficulties and the sounds are all over the place and it's not very good. Oh, yes, you should enter into the public radio contest. And I did, and won a prestigious Golden Reel Award from the National Federation of Community Broadcasters.
How fantastic. And so that show is available on the website.
That's on the web. You need real audio, but you can hear it in real audio on the web. You just click on the little button. Yes, and it's a half-hour show. But it's very interesting. And the good news about that is that Mitsubishi, who was going to put a salt plant in at San Ignacio Bay, where the California gray whales go to have their babies, they have pulled out of that project. Enough people. It's a success story of people writing in, calling, making a fuss, saying, we don't like this. This is not right. And they're not going to do it. So the gray whales have been saved once again due to public outcry.
And has Travel Radio contributed to that, do you think?
I'd like to think so, because a lot of people did hear the show, and one of the comments that the researchers made, and I kept it on the tape, was, this has got to be stopped. I'm going to do everything I can to get to Mitsubishi to stop it. And they have a website, too, CaliforniaGrayWhale.com, and there's probably updated information there.
That's fantastic. Well, ours basically come into a conclusion, and I've really enjoyed this. Unfortunately, one of the one thing that annoys me about running ACB Radio, and this is the only thing that does, is that sometimes I'm so busy actually overseeing the thing that I don't actually get a lot of time to listen to the wonderful programming we have. So sometimes I get a chance to sit down late at night and listen to one of your shows when it's going out, and I always find them fascinating. And we get a lot of email from people to say how much they enjoy the very professionally put together pieces that you do. And for those who haven't heard it, and we've whetted their appetite, I trust, Travel Radio goes out at 10:30 Eastern on Thursday evenings. That's 2:30 in the morning GMT, and then it gets repeated every 2 hours on our 24-hour cycle. And as Colin Howard earlier said, my friend with the warm beer mug, you can hear it on the National Talking Express supplement, which comes up as well. And I'm certainly looking forward to many more Travel Radio programs on ACB Radio, Pat, and I really appreciate you coming on the show today. It's been a real pleasure.
I'm looking forward to producing more shows and sending them out to the world, and I encourage anyone to contact me. You can email me, Pat, Patricia, producer, anyone, at travelradio.com. So anything you put before Travel Radio gets to me.
Well, that's really very, very versatile of you.
Yes, I'm accessible. And I always am interested in ideas and comments and criticism and anything. Let me know what you think. I appreciate it very much.
That's great. Well, oops, my microphone's just about to collapse on me. It obviously knows that I've done my dash. There we go. That's fixed it up. Thanks again, and we'll keep in touch. And I'm very pleased that Baby Mosen, who still hasn't put in an appearance, has allowed us to do this today.
Okay, well, best of luck with the new family member.
Yes, thanks, if he's ever getting here, and we'll speak again, I'm sure.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Okay, bye now.
Good night.
That's Patricia Lawrence from Travel Radio, and that is a really very well put together program. And if you haven't heard it, I'm sure you'll enjoy it, especially if you enjoy finding out about wonderful places around the world that you can go. And that's great. Wonderful. You're listening to ACB Radio Blind Line, and now we're into the open forum part of the program. Just a reminder about that telephone number, 1-212-812-2800. It's a New York number. New York's in the US, you might have heard of it. 1-212-812-2800. Courtesy of Spiderphone. Thank you to spiderphone.com for giving us this facility. Enter the PIN 1-0-8-3-4-1-7-3. That's in your title bar right now. That's 1-0-8-3-4-1-7-3. After you've entered the telephone number, which is 1-212-812-2800. And you may be listening to this archived. So this is live between 9 and 11 Eastern on a Wednesday night, 1 till 3 GMT Thursday morning. So if you're listening to it now, where it is now coming up to, what is it, 1:58 GMT, that's 2 minutes to 10 Eastern. If you're listening right now, give us a call, because you know what happens? Well, I'll tell you, in case you don't. Sometimes I sit here for ages waffling, and then we have a big barrage of calls in the open forum, and the barrage gets larger and larger and gets to this kind of crescendo, and then the program has to finish and we can't get through all the calls. So be the first off the rank, as they say. Give us a call. I did mention one subject you may want to discuss. It's a bit of a hairy one, and I thought we could bash this one about a bit. It's the question of humor, blindness humor, or disability humor in general. I got an email a while ago suggesting we talk about this. What do you think, for example, if you hear a blind broadcaster on a local radio station, and hopefully this blind broadcaster has been fortunate enough to get a foot in the door and hasn't been usurped by the technology, and they have been able to get a job at the local radio station, and they make a Stevie Wonder joke. Example, what did Stevie Wonder say when he got given a cheese grater for Christmas? Answer, gosh, this is the most violent book I've ever read. Or another one I've heard recently, what's the definition of endless love? Answer, Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder playing tennis. Now, is that offensive? Do you find it offensive? Is it degrading to blind people? Have we become too sensitive? Or does it make a difference whether it's a blind person or a sighted person telling the joke? Some people say not. Some people say that if you're a blind person and you have to poke fun at your own kind, as it were, you have to poke fun at blind people, then what you're actually trying to do is mask your own insecurities. And then, of course, we have this sort of whole issue of Mr. Magoo, which was supposed to be humorous, and according to some, you know, Mr. Magoo is clearly at least a visually impaired person, doing things that, according to some, make him look pretty stupid, and his stupidity stems from his blindness, and yet it was supposed to be humorous. Now, I wonder whether you'd care to comment on whether things like that are humorous, or whether in the case of Mr. Magoo, it's not funny, but it's not worth getting all upset about. What's your take on blindness humor? Have we all become a bit too thick-skinned? Or does it send negative signals in some way? Or does it depend? Have you got a middle view on this? Love to hear your thoughts on blindness and disability humour. We had a guy here in New Zealand, actually, who has cerebral palsy and makes a living as a comedian. He did an ad for the service provider that was fundraising, the service provider that provides a lot of services to people with physical disabilities, and it was kind of a humorous ad, sort of, you know, well, why should you give money to these cripples, sort of thing. And some people in the disability community really strongly objected to it. They felt it was in bad taste. So if you have a view on that, give us a call. 1-212-812-2800 is the number. That's in New York. 1-212-812-2800, courtesy of spiderphone.com, enter the PIN 1083-41-73. That's 1083-41-73. If you'd like to raise something else, if you think that there's something else that is worth raising that you might get people commenting on, you're most welcome. The floor is yours, and you can raise any topic that you like. Phone up and talk to me, or I shall be monologuing for the next hour, and that will be very dull for all concerned. I can tell you, on the local front, it is Heidi Mosen's birthday today, and I did encourage Heidi to come in and say hello. Well, I'm not sure if she's going to. She's got far too many presents to be concerned with the likes of we Blindline participants today, it seems, but maybe she'll come in. She is 4 today. Doesn't seem like 4 years ago that she was born. But it is, and you know, she got all sorts of wonderful presents today. She got an umbrella. Superstitions. Now, there's something that we haven't talked about before. Probably shouldn't either. But, you know, the whole question for example, Heidi put this umbrella up inside. Now, my mother tells me that that's a very bad thing to do, that you actually shouldn't do that. It brings bad luck. What other superstitions are there? Anyway, let's go to the phones now, because we have a call. Good evening to you.
Hello, Jonathan. This is Richard from New York.
Hi, Richard. We've got a big long delay there because I guess you're talking on the old internet telephony.
Yes, we are, sir. I'm using the Delta 3. It seems to be working a little better tonight. Still have to shut off jaws, though. As far as your question is, as far as humor and making humor, I have to say I'm guilty of it. I make a lot of fun of myself a lot of times, especially when I go away to my conferences and all, and we just have a good time. So, as a matter of fact, I remember I used to be able to see Mr. Magoo, so I have a problem with Mr. Magoo or making depends on it. Again, I think it all depends on who's doing it. And there are, of course, sometimes when you know that people are doing it to be insulting, but that's part of life.
Of course, there are some who say, and many who did say at the NFB convention in Chicago in 1995, I believe it was, that actually kids get a very hard time because of Mr. Magoo and suffer long-term psychological damage. Is that a fair comment, do you think?
That's pretty much my comment. I would like to say, I noticed one thing on the blind tech list is about as far as the digital audio books, and I know there was quite a heated discussion about how the U.S. is not going in the same vein as the DAISY Consortium.
Yeah, go ahead.
And, an experience with that, my organization, I was trying to have my books, our manuals recorded by Recordings for the Blind,
and they evaluated them, and they said they weren't going to do them because they were technical manuals, and that just kind of floored me because, I mean, here they are, they're recording books for accountants and lawyers and textbooks for colleges, so I don't understand why they couldn't do it, one, and two, they're very restricted on what they were going to be doing for a digital format, and I just really find it disgusting that they have to actually go through a panel before they'll decide whether or not they're going to record something.
Well, I can tell you that I've seen one of these machines in action, and I understand RFB&D is embracing DAISY. Incidentally, we're negotiating to try and get a slot in George Kirsch's busy schedule, and we are hopeful that if his schedule still permits, that in 2 weeks' time he'll be able to come on the program and talk to us about this. I've been in contact with him. But, you know, this DAISY system is just out of this world, because for textbooks and things, you can do things like push a key, a go-to-page key, and just type in the page number, let's say page 53, and instantly you're on print page 53, so it's, you know what the page numbers are, which is fantastic when you're trying to do references and do put footnotes together and things like that. You've got a table of contents that's hyperlinked, so you can hear the chapters, and as soon as you hear a chapter that you're interested in or a subheading that you're interested in, you press a key and boom, instantaneously you're at that subheading. The DAISY system and the whole digitization of talking books that's going on in most of the world is awesome.
I listened to the whole Australian... Yes, well, I had heard that whole demonstration that they did when they broadcast the Australia there, and it was quite... I was really impressed from Japan that actually recorded, demonstrated how someone could record a book, record something, and format it into a book, which I thought was a really good demonstration.
Yes. It is a really good demonstration of it, and you know, things like recipe books and I guess all sorts of text material really make the thing shine. I've got a border clause backing up here, Richard, so I better get to them, but I appreciate you breaking the ice for us once again, and we'll look forward to talking with you in next week maybe.
Alrighty, Jonathan, you take care, and I hope the little one comes soon.
Thanks very much, yes. Okay, we'll catch you later. That's Richard Costa calling all the way from New York via internet telephony. And let's try and take this call right here. Yes, hello, this is Blind Line.
Hello, is that me?
It is you.
Hello. Hello.
Hello there, this is you speaking live.
Can you hear me? Yes, it's Colin back again.
I thought I recognised that face. How are you?
Since then I've had a cup of tea. There's not a warm beer today. You're talking about humour and the blind. There's been a very, very good programme on over here in the UK. They did one called Goodness Gracious Me, which was for the ethnic minorities, mainly Indians and what have you. That's migrated to the television, and that has been exceedingly successful, and is now... done a series, I think there's two series going out up to date, called Yes Sir I Can Boogie, and that is done by people in wheelchairs, people with crutches, blind, you name it, they do it, and it's absolutely wonderful.
Well, it's interesting. I've often wondered, Colin, one of my favourite comedians are the Goons, and, you know, I don't think there'll ever be comedians like the Goons again. They're just something extraordinary. You'd have to wonder what exactly is inside Spike Milligan's mind. But, you know, they used to do a lot of taking off of Indians in particular, and I guess that's where the Goodness Gracious Me comes from, actually. I wonder how that would go down these days.
Yeah, well, this series, Goodness Gracious Me, that's just gone on to BBC television, has actually, I think, did it win a Sony Award or something? It won some award or other, I know. And it's a brilliant programme. It's really wonderful. Let us go out and have an English. Let us go and find something that's really bland. That is really nice.
Yes.
Incredible. And this one, I Can Boogie is really great. It's it was on 6:30, just before You Know What.
Oh, the old Archers,
so
eh?
What? So, Yeah, good actors, yes. I don't know when they're going to run the next series, but I'm afraid I haven't got any recordings of it. But as soon as I know when it's going to be on again, I can let you know. You can give it a try. I think it's brilliant. I'm hoping it's not one of these that's going to be blocked because of copyright problems.
A lot of those 6:30 broadcasts are actually. So, you know, is anybody trying at the BBC, for example, trying disability humour?
There's been no complaints about it, as far as I'm aware. There's a programme called Feedback, which you might possibly have heard of, where listeners write in. And I've heard nobody actually writing into that programme saying, that shouldn't be done, you know, it's terrible, terrible, terrible. Because it's done by disabled people themselves. And so, you know, we're laughing at ourselves, we're laughing with ourselves. And I think that's quite healthy. You know, if you're going to laugh at one's disability as a disabled person, I think that's okay. It's when you're laughing to denigrate somebody, that's when it's dangerous. You know? Do you see what I mean?
Yes, yes.
We used to have at school in those days when I was a little boy many years ago. we used to have little Stevie Wonder, you know, the pop singer. He used to sing For Once in My Life and all his various songs of the 60s. We used to call him Stevie Blunder.
Oh my goodness!
You know, that was our pet name for him, Stevie Blunder. Oh, well, Stevie Blunder's on the radio again. He's always on the radio, isn't he, you know?
Yes, that's probably why he seems to have been able to retire over the last little while.
Sorry, what were you saying?
I was just saying it's probably why he's been able to retire, it seems, over the last little while.
Oh, yeah, well, I haven't heard of him in some time, it's true.
Yeah.
And of course, Ray Charles is a jazz fan, you know, a wonderful person with jazz and so on, you know. But with the humour, I honestly don't think that there's any problems. As long as we can laugh at ourselves and don't take it too serious. You know, laugh at the funny things that happen to people, rather than when it starts getting political, that's when I think it's dodgy.
Excellent. Well, those are very nice lucid thoughts at 12 minutes past 3 in the morning for you, and I appreciate you coming on and sharing them.
I've just had a cup of tea, and
yes.
You know, earlier on I said about the weather, we had it up in sort of 80s about 48 hours ago, but now it's down to about 45, 50, so it's dropped.
Well,
the
there you go.
The wind is right round to the north.
Well, my advice to you, Colin, is now that you've had your cup of tea, have a wee lie down, dear.
I'll do that. Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to hearing about the nipper.
Yeah.
All the best.
You and me both, mate.
Okay, cheers, Jonathan.
Okay.
All the best then, mate.
Bye.
Okay, I am going to go to bed now, I think. Cheers.
Bye. There he goes, folks. Colin Howard of the UK. You're listening to ACB Radio Blindline. If you'd like to give us a call, 1-212-812-2800 is my number. 1-212-812-2800, courtesy of spiderphone.com, into the PIN 108-341-73. 13 minutes past the hour. Hello, this is Blindline. Thank you for waiting. Hello? You mean you didn't wait after all? Oh, I do beg your pardon. I've got to put the call to air. It helps if you push the right button, Mosen. Hello there, thank you for waiting.
Hi, Jonathan, this is Marvin Rush.
Mr. Marvin Rush, well, you certainly weren't in a rush to get on the program tonight, I hope, because you've had a bit of a wait, and I appreciate you waiting.
Oh, that's okay. I enjoyed Colin's call, and it was, you know, it was fun to listen to. I agreed with a lot of what he says.
That's good. It's nice to have a sort of a convivial world.
Which, you know, and I've always subscribed to this. I think probably a lot of blind people, like it or not, you get asked to speak to various groups. You know I do as a teacher for the visually impaired. And one of the things that I do, I mean, I always try to include some manner of a funny little story or something funny that happened to me, and the only reason it would be funny is because I'm blind, you know.
Mm.
Because to me, it puts everyone else at ease. And that's one of the most important things that you can do to my way of thinking.
Well, you see, I must admit, some of it's incredibly funny. A few weeks ago, and I have to catch up with my Snowman Radio broadcasts too, but a few weeks ago now, Jim Snowbarger had a really great story. He went through a phase of telling quite a few blind humour stories, and he was telling one about a guy who was trying to practice a rousing speech about blindness, and he went into an empty, he was a college professor, I think the story went, and he went into a lecture hall and started rehearsing the speech, and he kind of got halfway through and it just wasn't flowing the way he wanted, and so he cursed and started back at the beginning, and then he got a bit of steam up and then it didn't work, and eventually somebody tapped him on the shoulder and said, "Excuse me, sir, but we're trying to sit a test in here."
Yeah, I heard it, and I thought that was really funny.
Yeah,
you know, when I was in Austin, Texas, probably 25 years ago, I guess, I was walking down a street, and on this particular street they have a lot of street vendors, and there was a lady in front of me who was selling egg rolls, and I stuck my cane between her legs, and she fell, you know, which of course, being the gentlemanly person I am, I reached my hand down, and I said, "Ma'am, can I help you up?" And she says, "Hell no." She says, "I've had enough help from you. Thank you very much."
Yeah, oh, isn't it terrible? Isn't it terrible when those things happen? But yes, you know, those stories are, I think, we've got to keep things in perspective, don't we?
Well, to me, anything, and especially when you're speaking to a group, anything like that that you can tell, it puts people at ease, you know. And as far as the comedians, now I think that sometimes they might get a bit out of line, and if that's the case, and I guess we just go on, or else if it bothers you bad enough, I guess we could send them an email or write them a letter or whatever. But for the most part, I mean, I find most of the stuff funny, you know. Sounds like you have a cold, by the way.
Sorry, Marvin. I finally found my mute button for the microphone, because I've been fighting this terrible cold thing. It's been very well. excuse me. It's been very well behaved up until now, and now I'm in a coughing fit I can't control. So, excuse me. Yes, I think he makes some good points. I'm dying in here already. Yeah. excuse me.
Well,
most embarrassing when that happens, but there's not much I can do about it. I appreciate you giving us a call, and hopefully you would have spiked some others to contribute as well.
Well, I hope so. Go have two old fingers of old crow and a wash tub.
Marvelous. We'll speak with you next time. That's Marvin Rush calling all the way from Louisiana. This is AZB Radio Blind Line, and it's Jonathan Mosen with you. Just, if you'd like to give us a call, the number is 1-212-812-2800. Please excuse my cough. Just move away a little bit from the computer and you'll be fine. I think about 3 feet from the PC should be a safe distance. 1-212-812-2800. And then enter the PIN 10834173. If you've been waiting till things calm down before you call in, well, we've got a free board of calls now, so by all means get in touch, excuse me, and you'll be able to get straight through, assuming I can last the distance. Superstitions are something that I wondered if you wanted to talk about. Tell me about some of the superstitions that your mother or father used to tell you. Now, I was reminded of this morning, because these things, no matter how silly they seem, you remember them, don't you? And so as soon as Heidi got this child's umbrella for her 4th birthday, and she put it up inside, my initial reaction was, don't do that. Don't do that, you know. Because, of course, of this old superstition that you're not supposed to put up umbrellas in the house. I'm just trying to think of what else. Of course, there's the famous one about walking under ladders. I think there's some superstition associated with peacock feathers. And one thing that also struck me as interesting, I don't know whether, you know, this is a superstition or something more deeply cultural, what the story is, But in the building that we were staying in when we were in New York a while ago, it was a building with no floors, with the number 4 in it. No 4th floor and no 14th floor. And I believe that's a Japanese thing. I inquired about it, and apparently that's how it is. So if I'm wrong about that, I apologize, but apparently that's the story. Something about the number 4. So they were quite happy to have a 13th floor in their building, no floor 4 and no floor 14. Interesting, isn't it? If you'd like to ring up and share anything with us today on ACB Radio, then by all means give us a call. The number is 1-212-812-2800, and then into the PIN 1083-4173. Hello, this is Blindline. You're straight on the air.
Hello, John.
Hello there.
How you doing? This is Jeff Bishop.
How are you, Jeff? Nice to hear from you.
Yeah. Hey, what are you using for a checkbook program these days?
For what program, sorry?
For handling, you know, financial stuff.
I've got Microsoft Money 2000 to take a look at, but I haven't installed it yet. Apart from that, I'm just sort of using telebanking and a few notes on a password protected file in my Browlite and the calculator, and that's about it. I do have internet banking access. That helps.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm doing. I have Money 99, and it is not very accessible at all, actually. And so I really don't know if I want to go out and spend the $59 until somebody, you know, has posted something that says, yes, it works.
Not to put the hard word on or anything, but don't you work for Microsoft?
No, I used to.
Ah.
I work for Keen now. I've worked for Keen since June of 97. And they actually closed a site here in Tucson, so then I went to work for Keen. I'm still very much affiliated with them because our company does work for Microsoft, but I don't work for them directly anymore.
Yeah, well, I'd be interested to hear how Money 2000 is going. I've sort of heard mixed reports. You know, some people are quite emphatic about it and say, yep, works fine, do all my books with Money 2000, no problem. And others say you need scripts for it. But then, you know, there are some people who seem to need scripts for everything, as if, you know, scripts will compensate for their inability to get a grasp of the program. Like, for example, people want scripts for ICQ. I've never seen the need. I don't know what they do that, you know, enhances ICQ from its default state, but people seem to want them.
Well, speaking of ICQ, I've had a lot of problems with it in that when you tab, you get into an edit, which I guess is where the web search is.
Yeah.
And then if you hit tab again, it brings up the context menu, and it's difficult to really get to the ICQ button. And David Pullman and I have worked together on trying to figure it out, but, you know, through email, and I can't quite figure out how to get rid of that stupid web search box at the bottom.
I think that that box only exists if you've got there's something if you've got enhanced controls on or something like that. There's a feature that turns that off.
Oh, really? Okay.
But even when it's on, which I have it on, I find that by hitting a shift tab, you can move around the controls that way. Just don't tab.
I've tried shift tabbing, and I just sit at the same spot, even if the spacebar won't invoke the button. So something weird's going on. I'll continue to play with it, but all right. Well, I just wanted to see if you had any ideas, you know, there. And
Someone else may have. I'm really keen to get to grips with money, especially since my company is now getting more involved in making money. I want to be able to handle it properly.
Yes, exactly right.
but also because my internet banking service allows me to get a statement and import it right into money, which I think is a groovy idea, and I can do that with my credit card statements and the company accounts and everything like that, and it seems like a very good way of keeping track of things. So I hope to be able to install that in the next week or so.
It's actually not too bad. I mean, you can tab and you can find out what the data is in each of the fields, but the field titles don't speak.
Oh.
And so if we could just resolve that, it wouldn't be too bad. So be interested to see if anyone else has any ideas.
Yeah, so you've already given it a go and found it a wee bit troublesome, have you?
Yeah, Monday 99, not 2000.
Oh, yeah, okay.
As I said, I'm not sure I want to go out and... I'm sure I don't want to go out and spend the $60 on it if I'm going to be at the same spot.
Well, I'll certainly let you know how I get on, and somebody else might save us both the bother and give us a ring. I seem to recall some vague mention in Dennis Brown's interview about money, so maybe Dennis is going to save us from this and write some wonderful Dennis Brownish type.
Oh, good.
Scripts.
Dennis, pick up your phone.
Yeah. Okay, Jeff, nice to hear from you.
Okay, John, take care.
Okay.
Yeah, take care of yourself.
Thanks, I will.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, this is ACB Radio Mainstream Blind Line. It's now 26 past the hours. We do this live 9 till 11 Eastern on a Wednesday night, 1 to 3 Thursdays GMT. And if you'd like to give us a call, we've got a free board once again. I seem to have recovered from that. Isn't it terrible? And the way things are set up here, it's really difficult to mute the microphone, which is, you know, I would certainly have done that to save you all the bother. But anyway, 1-212-812-2800 is the number. 1-212-812-2800, and then enter the PIN 1083-4173. That PIN number 1083-4173. And thanks to our friends at spiderphone.com for making it all possible. Who's coming to Louisville then? And what are we going to do there? I'm really looking forward to this. Not too far away now, about a month and a bit away from Louisville. And if you're unable to make it, and I hope you are able to make it, but if you can't, ACB Radio Mainstream will be suspending its normal programming, as they say, to bring you gabble-to-gabble coverage of the ACB 2000 convention in Louisville. And you'll be able to hear that, and if you're unable to hear it live, then we'll be running the convention coverage around the clock, archived, and hopefully we'll have some other coverage as well. I'm not really quite sure what will happen when we get there, but it's our intention to give you good quality coverage. An ISDN line is being installed for the express purpose of giving you convention coverage from the hotel, and so ACB is really going pulling out all the stops to make sure you get really good coverage of the convention this year, just in case you can't make it. But it's going to be great to meet so many of you there. We've had some discussion on the ACB radio lists about the convention, and there's even been a suggestion that we should host a Blind Line Live. I don't know whether ACB has the space for us to do that, sort of a town hall meeting of Blind Line. Instead of taking calls, we could just, you know, throw cordless mics out to the audience and see which really agile blind person can catch one. So, anyway, we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to have a lot of fun in Louisville at the beginning of July. Now, if you'd like to give us a call, you're most welcome, because we have a free board of calls. It's been a bit slow today. I don't know, is there some major baseball game on or something? Is that what the story is? Or is everything just so right with the world that you don't want to ring up and... Well, that's fine. You can ring up and say something positive. That's okay. We have been talking a little bit about blindness humour. Had a couple of calls on that if you've just joined us. Really just finding out about what you think is appropriate. Does it make a difference whether we keep these jokes in-house? Or do you object to blindness humour altogether? Or have we got too sensitive? Of course, I guess very similar to that is blindness terminology. Some people really object strongly to the use of terms like blink, for instance. I had to have a bit of a giggle because, of course, in blindness slang, wink is the slang term for a sighted person. I think it's a reasonably affectionate term, isn't it? I mean, it's not intended to be derogatory to my knowledge, although maybe some consider it that way. Anyway... what happens, of course, when you get people from agencies coming in who have no prior knowledge of blindness is that they don't realise these sorts of cultural things. Maybe they shouldn't need to. But our agency here is looking at a campaign where the agency endorses certain practices and products for various reasons. They might be particularly blindness friendly, or maybe they've got good colour contrast, or maybe, you know, they're some sort of sunglasses or something like that. Anyway, they're going to call this thing the Big Wink. Isn't that amazing? They're going to call it the Big Wink, and I fear that that's probably because they have no idea what it means. Area code 302, good evening to you.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Lynn Schneider calling.
Hello, Lynn. Nice to hear from you.
Great. I just wanted to tell you, I've got SoundForge being shipped to me right now, so I'm very excited.
As we speak. Wow, well, that's really exciting. Is that the full SoundForge?
That's the full one, yes.
Oh, you're going to love that.
I'm very excited. It's, I had to do a little shopping to find the cheapest price because it's, if you buy it from Sonic Foundry, it's really expensive.
Can I ask you how much you found it for in the end? What was the best deal you could get?
One was, I think I had, I found $275.
And where did you get that from?
It was a company called Software Plus, but I ended up going with egghead.com, which was $278.
Okay.
So
that's a very good deal because I think the Sonic Foundry people are selling it for something like $4.99, aren't they?
Oh, I know. Yeah, and I was like, well, I can't afford that. There's no way. So, you know, with this convention coming up and everything, just real quick about disability humor. Mm. I mean, I think there is tasteful humor and there's humor that's not tasteful, and really, I'm not really bothered by it too much. I think humor is a great tool to communicate with the sighted community. Humor can be used to demonstrate things and to show people the absurdities of you know, the mythology about disabilities. And I've always used humor in all my communications with sighted people, and I find that it's the best tool that I have, really. A smile and a laugh every once in a while. So I do think we're a little bit too, like you were saying, thick-skinned. I think we all need to just take a chill pill and, you know, have a laugh every once in a while.
Yeah, chin up, man, yeah. It is interesting that you say that because so many people are afraid, so, so very afraid of saying the wrong thing. And, you know, you get into a conversation with someone, the worst thing, of course, is when it happens at a job interview. And you might be sitting in the waiting room and somebody's come to talk to you and they say, you know, did you see that program on TV last night? And they say, oh, sorry, I mean, did you listen to it? You know, and they get all on edge. And,
right.
You know, you've got to be able to find some way of breaking the ice, don't you?
Oh yeah, my coworkers know that they can say things to me. They can say anything they want. I mean, obviously appropriateness is important, but people will ask me any question and I use humor as a tool, and I think it's the best tool that I have. I mean, and it always works. But one real last quick thing. As far as the Daisy book project, I think I'm on the Consumer Advisory Council for my local library for the blind, physically handicapped. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that frustrates me a lot is that, you know, with using the internet and using technology the way I do, I know what it can do for us. You know, I know its potential. But we do have quite a large elderly population. And we also have people, even on that council, who are just so resistant to change of any kind, even if it's good. And sometimes I kind of gotten the idea that you have to go slowly because people just can't take really rapid change, or some people can't. And,
see, I detect that the resistance in this instance, and I might be completely wrong about that, it appears to be coming from NLS itself, on the basis that they're not keen on adopting the CD-ROM as the medium, because from the technology that I've seen, it's not much different. If you just want to hear a book from beginning to end, as in, say, a work of fiction or an autobiography that you're reading, you just put the CD in the thing and push the play button and let it go. So I don't know whether the average... If there is, I mean, it's terrible to generalize, but for the sake of this argument, the average elderly recreational borrower is actually going to find it any less or any more difficult to use.
Yeah, well, I think, too, NLS got burnt once. They tried the combination machine. I don't know if you know about that, the cassette and record player.
Oh, yeah,
combo.
I heard something about that.
And it sort of was a flop, although a lot of people I know really like that. But I think now they sort of learn from that, and they're... I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I think it's a great idea, And of course, I'm ready for it. But but change, I guess, does come eventually. But boy, it's just what you have to go through to get it going.
Yeah, well, you may be very interested in the program we hope to put to air in 2 weeks' time on this topic, because I think the future of talking books is a topic that's likely to be of interest to a lot of people.
And one thing that's going to happen is that the cassette technology that they're using now, I mean, eventually they're going to have trouble getting the cassettes and the replacement parts for these machines, because cassette technology is kind of going the way of the dinosaur, really. So they're going to have to do something, I think.
Except that I hope nobody brings them to life in a future generation and has them rampaging through parks killing people. Imagine all these cassettes winding their bits of tape around us all and tripping us up, and oh my gosh.
Well, listen, you take some peppermint tea and take care of that cold, and I will see you guys in Atlanta, or in Louisville. Atlanta, whoa.
Yeah, that was a good one, Lynn. Yeah, good one.
That was bad. Oh, Lord.
Yeah, take your own advice and take a chill pill, man.
I have friends going to Atlanta. That's why it's in my head. Anyway.
Okay, then. See you later. Bye.
Goodbye.
This is ACB Radio Mainstream, and wow, this is Blind Line, courtesy of spiderphone.com. Let's put this call. Oh, my goodness, what have I done? Hang on a minute. We're just having a major business here. We're going to get this call on the air very shortly. I just got to shut this window and push that, and there we go. Let's take this call from area code 80. I can't remember now. Good evening to you.
804. This is Scott White in Virginia. How you doing, Jonathan?
I'm doing just well. I've been better actually, but I'm hanging in there.
Okay. This is my first time calling in this evening, so I don't know whose idea it was to come up with ACB Radio, but it was definitely a good idea. So I've enjoyed it, and I know from hearing a lot of discussions on other lists and so forth that a lot of people are tuning into it and really enjoying it, and I think it's a great idea.
Well, I really appreciate that, and I think you can probably blame people like Paul Edwards and Chris Gray and some of the other members of the ACB Board of Directors for the damage.
So I've gotten recently, into the PC audio list, and I've got a couple computers now and gotten one DSL and interested in broadcasting things like I used to do. I used to work for a radio reading service and used to love broadcasting on the air. Unfortunately, I didn't get to talk that much until it came around to fundraising time. But I always enjoy talking on the radio.
Yeah, well, of course, with your DSL connection and all of the tools that are now at our disposal, you can, and of course ACB Radio is always looking for programming ideas. There's no end of opportunities for internet broadcasting these days.
Yeah, right now I'm trying to develop my a website to come up with some unique content and support out there for blind folks. So I'm sort of working on that and working on trying to develop my skills in web programming, for just myself and also for, job possibilities and so forth.
Excellent.
Ran across one thing on the, it was on the PC audio list this afternoon when I got home, and it's actually with the Shoutcast streams. What I used to do is I used to get a recording of the files, but I used to take the output of one sound card and pipe it into the next one, into another computer, and record it that way. Of course, that was the sort of going the long way around the barn to take it from digital to analog and back to digital again. But they have this, of course, we have CD rippers, where this is called Stream Ripper. And basically what it does is it takes your Shoutcast stream and, just records it as it's coming in right to disk. So it works really well. It's really speech-friendly.
Have you got it working with ACB Radio, by the way, and other Live 365 streams? Because there was a message from Don Coco to say he was having difficulty with it when it came to Live 365 streams.
I did try it with one Live 365, and it looks like maybe something, the header information maybe encoded differently or something, because it never really started downloading, and the header information as far as where it tells you what the name of the stream is and what's playing at that time, that looked like there was a little bit of garbage data in there, so there might be something mixed up with that. I haven't gotten that to work, just the Shoutcast streams.
Okay, I imagine that manufacturers of the software will deal with that, because there are nearly 10,000 Live 365 streams now, so that's a lot of streams. What I used to be able to do, and I still do it actually every morning, I have a macro that comes on and records something off BBC Radio 4 for me. I'm able to turn my sound, I have a Turtle Beach, and I put my sound card into the stereo mixer mode, but in the SB Live, it's also called What You Hear, and that allows you to record from, say, a shoutcast stream or real audio, all on the same computer.
I heard, I think it was on one of the previous blind lines that I heard you talking about the keyboard from Logitech as far as the cordless wireless keyboard.
Mm.
And you said it did, on the box it states like 6 feet, but you said you have one and it actually does a lot better than 6 feet.
Well, it sure does. In fact, I couldn't tell you exactly how many feet. I guess it would be at least 30 or 40 feet. That would be the distance between our bedroom and the studio here. And what I do is take the keyboard, to the bedroom at night, and when I'm sitting listening to different internet stations or MP3 files just to unwind and go to sleep through the FM transmitter, the keyboard works just fine. That's a sure longer way than 6 feet by a long chalk.
So they were, that's definitely long enough for me. Now, the I've seen some discussion in some of the list about different FM transmitters and things like that. What transmitter do you use?
At the moment, I'm using a Veronica FM product, which came out of the UK, and it's nothing fancy. It's very cheap. It's just a circuit board. It doesn't have a fancy box and switches, and it doesn't allow you to really easily adjust the frequency with a tuning knob or anything like that. But it's very stable. Its drift is negligible, and it's got a lot of grunt. You know, it certainly goes right around the house, and if you take a Walkman, we've been able to cruise around the block and still hear it, you know.
Yeah, I hadn't had a chance to write any emails, but I've been looking into this the gentleman that you had on there a while back on Main Menu as far as the webcaster.
Mm.
So I don't know exactly what the distance is on that or exactly how that works. I downloaded the demo software, but...
I've heard, from people on the PC audio list that the radio webcaster really does do very well, even in quite built-up areas. We hope to be having a competition in the next few weeks where we will have a number of radio webcasters to give away on ACB Radio. So if you stay tuned, you might be able to win yourself one.
Okay, well, I'll keep my money for a while then.
Oh, don't do that. I mean, you can always give the other one away to a friend. Mike needs the money, you know.
But as far as with blindness and humor, that's my way of... I would say that that's something of breaking down barriers. I mean, when I go to work, I work for a large company and interface with a lot of people. And, you know, people are apprehensive in dealing with you at first and so forth. And that's the way that I put them at ease and break down barriers. One of my associates that's on the same team with me, we have a really good working relationship. And while some people might find this that is offensive, one day I had my coffee cup in my hand on the way to the kitchen to get a cup of coffee. And I heard him in his cube, and I stopped by because I had a question to ask him. And, of course, he saw my empty coffee cup, and he said, and he threw 2 cents in it. He says, oh, isn't that the reason why you're here? So, meaning the old blind guy with the, you know, the cup. And the next day when I saw him, I said, well, I don't have my pencils, but here's a pen. Can I sell that to you? So, we have a good working relationship, and I think that humor goes a long way in breaking down barriers.
Yeah, interesting thought. Well, I guess where there's a dividing line, of course, will vary from person to person. One person's humour will be the point at which something becomes offensive to someone else. So I suppose it's quite a difficult one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The switching subjects here, but in Louisville, did you have any type of presentations planned for audio or anything like that?
Yeah, there is a seminar on working with SoundForge happening... excuse me... nasty, happening a couple of days before the convention, on the Friday before the convention. I'm not clear as to how people have been selected for that or how they apply. All I know is that I'm going there to give the seminar, and that's about the extent of my knowledge. Also, For those who can't make that, I understand it's full, but I'm not clear about that. But for those who can't make it, my company is also going to be releasing an audio tutorial on SoundForge. It should be available on cassette and hopefully CD, and definitely downloadable. So it'll be downloadable and one of the other two media or both. And we hope to have finished it so we can sell it at the convention to those who want it.
And the I've heard different things from different folks. So some people, you know, use SoundForge like what you do, and others swear by Cool Edit. It was ease of use. I downloaded GoldWave, and that seems to do, you know, everything really that I needed to do. The only thing I haven't been able to find is something that will take a real audio file and convert it into a WAV file.
Yeah, that's quite difficult to do. There is a program, you may have read about it on the PC audio list, called Streambox Ripper, and it's hopelessly inaccessible right now, so we're putting pressure on them. I still swear by SoundForge, and SoundForge is the recommended editor for ACB radio production for this key reason. It is that SoundForge is the only editor that I'm aware of, with the possible exception of FastEdit, because I don't know enough about that to comment, but certainly this applies to CoolEdit and GoldWave. SoundForge is the only editor out of those three that uses standard Windows selection keys to select your data and then easily delete it.
Okay. Sorry, you broke up a little bit there. Standard...
Windows selection keys. Let's say, for example, that you... if you were going to select a character in Microsoft Word, you would hold down the control key and tap the right arrow. You would have selected the character to the right. Well, that's how you select a small chunk of sound in SoundForge. If you were going to select a word in Microsoft Word or any Windows application, you'd do control shift right arrow, and that's how in SoundForge you select a slightly larger chunk of text. So if you understand Windows selection, for example, you can put your cursor somewhere, and if you want to delete from there to the beginning of the file, you would just do what you would do in a word processor, do Control Shift Home and hit the delete key. Now, there's no other, you know, GoldWave and CoolEdit don't work that way, and so SoundForge is the most intuitive editor out there.
Yes, I would. Okay, from that point, I would agree. The main thing that I hate about GoldWave, and I've written to the author of the program about this, and hopefully I'll make some consideration in the future when he's developing new versions. But it would be, you know, while it would be playing, just to be able to, like in Sound Recorder, you can hit page up, page down, and you would quickly advance. Of course, in GoldWave, I know that there's the fast forward and rewind keys, but something that would move you a certain increment through the file, like page up, page down, doing in Sound Recorder.
Yeah, that also works in SoundForge. And when you hit the Enter key, you've paused in SoundForge, and you can hit the space bar and continue from where you paused. But page up and page down moves you in large-ish increments, just as it does in a standard Windows word processor. And control page up and control page down move you even further. And you can control how much any of these keys, the arrow keys and the page up and page down, select or move you by zooming with the up arrow and the down arrow. Basically, the more down arrows you press, the more each of those key presses will select for you.
Well, that does sound like that would be a lot better. I guess the different price tag between $40 and, what, $500 for SoundForge. You were speaking to the previous caller about maybe you can get it cheaper from something like Egghead or something.
Yeah, but you can get SoundForge XP, which does pretty much... I mean, you could easily produce a program for ACB Radio using SoundForge XP, and that's just $49.
Mm-hmm.
That has all these Windows selection keys I'm talking about. There are a couple of issues with it. One is that in some of the dialogues, there are a few custom controls. They speak just fine with window eyes. In their default state, they say nothing with JFW, unfortunately, but somebody might be able to write a script to work on that. But all the editing processes in SoundForge XP, the $49 version, are exactly the same, just as speech-friendly.
Hmm. Yeah, I'll have to check into that. And I heard earlier this evening someone was asking you about what you were using for checkbook program and so forth. I don't remember right. There's a page. It used to be connected off of HJ.com, but it's the users group that's sponsored by the guy that's in Australia. There's a couple of links off of that page for JFW speech friendly applications, and there's a simply. Yeah, I wouldn't call it simply checkbook, but it's simply checking or something like that.
Okay.
and that company puts out that one plus something else. I don't recall that right at the moment. I haven't evaluated them, but I think it's company, maybe a blind person instead of writing software, so I would assume it would work very well with the screen.
I seem to recall there's also a program called Talking Checkbook out there. I think maybe Charlie Crawford has something to do with it, but I'll have to check on that. But yeah, that's an interesting thought. Well, I appreciate you giving us a call. You've given us lots of food for thought there, and I always like hearing from a first-time caller, so I hope you'll call again in the future.
Okay, well, didn't mean to chat your ear off there, but hope you feel better. And that Talking Checkbook, that's a DOS version of a program.
Oh, okay.
As far as Windows, the other Simply Checking was the only thing that I knew that was Windows-based. Okay, well, good talking to you, and I'll see you in Louisville then.
Well, look forward to it. Thanks very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. And there we'll have to leave it, because I don't think I can do much more. I'm going to go and either take one of those things that are supposed to cure the common cold and doesn't do much good, or try a bit of brandy and lemon, which might help. But I appreciate you putting up with me for today, and we appreciate those of you who've called in, and we'll be back again for Blind Line next week, and I don't know who we'll have as a guest, but we'll try and find somebody of interest. A reminder that Main Menu is on Sunday, and before that, though, tomorrow, we have a really interesting selection of programming. I'm just having some difficulty with the computer. But anyway, we have the Blind Spot, which is on an hour special from 9:30 until 10:30 Eastern Time. That will be looking at the first person to climb Mount Everest who has a disability. And we also will have, before that, a review of the Braille Light from Brian Hartgen as part of his Infotech series. That will be on at 9 o'clock Eastern. And then, of course, Travel Radio, which, if you've been listening to the program, you will have heard about. So thanks for joining us, and we'll be back again for Blind Line next week. Bye for now.